Hey, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, everybody. Welcome to yet another Jumpstart. This one on using Microsoft VDI to enable new work styles. I'm Senior Technical Evangelist Joey Snow, and with me, my buddy, Corey Hines.
I'm disappointed.
You're disappointed?
Already?
We're less than 30 seconds in.
Well, I had everything you do, you lead with a DJ set.
And I didn't have a DJ.
And I even brought body glitter.
That's something I really don't want to see.
I'm Corey, and I'm here with Joey, and we're doing VDI for a day. And you know, this is obviously Microsoft VDI. A little bit about Citrix later on, and you know, if you're new to VDI, particularly you know the Microsoft stack for VDI, it's nice with Windows Server 2012 to kind of be able to say, hey, you know, we're going to do a Microsoft VDI solution with a straight face, because now we can. The change that's happened from 2008 R2 up to 2012 means there's so much you can legitimately do now, versus it just kind of being a very sort of entry level, introductory type VDI implementation. So we're kind of keen to dig into all that and how it works and what it is, and get you all oriented and up to speed and ready to roll.
Absolutely. Well, first, before we get started, let's introduce ourselves and give the folks at home some more information about ourselves. Hey, my name is Joey Snow. You can find me on the Twitters, at Joey Snow. I'm a senior technical evangelist here. I focus on Windows, formerly focused on Windows Server, also Windows Azure. And I work very, very closely with our product teams, including folks who work on the VDI solution, that enterprise client thing. You can also find us on Channel 9 on the Edge Show. And I've got a whole bunch of IT pro-like experience and stuff. And we've got my buddy sitting next to me who I've known for far, far too long.
Oh, Mr. dear Corey Lord, Hines. This goes back. So I'm Corey. I'm not a guy that works for Microsoft or Citrix. I'm the independent third party in this case. I've been a technical guy for basically my whole life. Right now, I own a company called Hall Systems, and we have a hosting platform for labs, demos, training, all that kind of stuff. Along with, we produce a lot of content around, you know, Windows Server, Windows Client, VDI, not just for Microsoft, but also with the joint Microsoft Citrix implementation. And yeah, I like you. I've been doing this for, it seems like, way, 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 way too long.
Absolutely, absolutely. So today, if this is your first Jumpstart, this is kind of fast-paced. We do these in about 50-minute long modules. For those of you who want to know kind of what our target is, anybody who's got experience with desktops and servers, that configuration and management, can really jump in here. There's really no expertise in VDI needed. Obviously, if you've got expertise in VDI, we're going to give you some of the updates to what's happening with Server 2012 and Windows 8 around a VDI solution. Also, a couple of suggested, you know, things if you're kind of new or you're not quite up to speed after this Jumpstart, not during, take a look at the Windows Server 2012 Server Virtualization course that's out on the Microsoft Virtual Academy. That's a great place to start because a lot of VDI is foundationally based on Hyper-V and virtualization. And then, of course, shameless self-promotion, the Windows 8 for IT Professionals Jumpstart, where we'll cover some of the, where we do cover some items that we're not going to get super in-depth here around things like user environment virtualization, application virtualization, some of those kind of other technologies, and the client itself. So it's a good place to start.
When you think about VDI as a holistic solution, it's not just, hey, put a desktop in a VM. It's much more than that. It's everything from, you know, yes, the desktop in the VM, but also terminal server, and then a big part of that is how you choose to deliver applications, how you choose to deliver management, and how you choose to virtualize the user's environment, the state, how files move around. And we're not necessarily getting into that, those upper layers today. This is more about the foundational, you know, both the terminal server implementation. I use the term terminal server because everyone knows what it means.
Remote desktop services in the new world.
Correct. But remote desktop service has multiple services now, so not to kind of confuse the old session desktop model with the VM desktop model. So we'll still probably use that term, the term terminal server, for all you really old guys like us. And so some of you new guys, so you kind of know what we're at. Well, you know. So we're not going to be going a lot into that. So that Jumpstart that you did on the Windows Enterprise Client covers, you know, many of the things like AppV and the variations of AppV. Because at the end of the day, right, once you have a desktop, it's just a desktop, and you've got to put apps in it, and you've got to manage it. Mm-hmm. The fact that it's a virtual desktop versus a physical desktop, if you do it well, it's irrelevant.
Absolutely.
Well, I guess there's some considerations, but it should become almost irrelevant.
Absolutely. So, folks at home, we want you to go ahead and join us and join the Microsoft Virtual Academy community. Microsoft Virtual Academy can be found at MicrosoftVirtualAcademy.com. This is a great place for free online training for both our IT pros and our developers out there. Well, we've got over 1 million people up there. There's a lot of great courses. I've just updated a whole bunch of stuff around Windows 8. Apart from the Jumpstart, there's a bunch of stuff that my partner in crime, Rick from Canada, has updated around server. So take a look at that. And of course, you get 50 bonus points for joining us today. You can grab that link there, aka.ms/MVA-voucher, and enter in the code. We'll leave that code up. It's VDI8JS, VDI8JS. We'll come back to that code a little later on, and hopefully it's in the break slides as well. But join us, won't you? 50 bonus points. You've got to get those achievements, right?
Achievement unlocked.
Absolutely. So, Corey, what are we talking about today?
VDI. So, but kind of step back for a second and kind of look at VDI as a holistic solution. The map that we're using for today starts off with kind of an introduction. Mm-hmm. What we're doing for the introduction is giving you background on why this is a good solution, why it's a valid solution, what the core scenarios for it are. And again, we had mentioned if you have no VDI experience, you kind of sit here and think, well, you know, when would I use this? And depending on, you know, if you've had conversations with some companies about VDI, it's, you know, VDI is kind of one thing to a lot of people. Mm-hmm. It's not a technology, it's a solution and a strategy that can encompass many technologies and many implementation methods. It's not one particular model, which is, you know, put a Windows desktop in a VM and connect to it over a remote protocol. It's a lot more than that. And so we're going to talk about the big picture of VDI, why it's important, where it fits in, what it's for. Then obviously, if it's a poor user experience, the adoption is going to be low and you're not going to use it. So the second module that we're going to run through talks about how within Windows 8 and Windows Server 2012, the user experience has gotten a whole lot better. And this is things like your RemoteFX, which RemoteFX has always been one of those really confusing topics for a lot of people, and myself included, to be quite honest, in determining, you know, what it is and how do I use it and when is it turned on and when is it not turned on and what does it do. So we'll kind of address all that and cover all that. Third module is all about deployment, right? So how do I set it up? Now, it's a piece of cake. It can be a piece of cake.
It can be a piece of cake.
Unless,
absolutely,
you know, depending how complex you choose to make it. For example, you know, we built a little VDI demo environment, which consists of a couple of servers and a couple of laptops and whatnot, which includes pool desktops, private desktops, remote app, session desktops, and a couple of variations of that, and I did that whole build last night in an hour and 30 minutes sitting on the floor of your office.
Yeah, absolutely. I actually tweeted a picture of VDI on the floor.
Yep. So you think about that, right? If you've done VDI before, pool desktops, private desktops, session desktops, remote app, all of them at the same time across a bunch of servers in under an hour and a half. That's you know, when all that was said, no, that was pretty impressive. That was,
yeah, I remember you were just sitting on the floor. You're going, gosh, that took forever. And I said, we just deployed this entire environment in an hour and a half. And you're like,
You weren't watching the progress bar on the floor.
No, that's true. I was working on the slide deck.
Yeah, exactly. Module 4 is about Hyper-V. Obviously, if you're doing Windows, VDI on Windows, it's going to be on Hyper-V.
Yes.
So a little bit of foundational background on Hyper-V. Now, this isn't, you know, hey, what is Hyper-V and what is a hypervisor? This is what in Hyper-V in 2012 makes VDI fundamentally different and fundamentally good. And so a lot of things we're going to cover in here, things like the new storage models. This is not the Windows of the past when it comes to storage and files and shares and things of that nature. So things like Hyper-V over SMB and something that gets not nearly enough press, something called CSV caching, which can drastically reduce the disk requirements for VDI in terms of performance. So you go from, you know, pounding the disks with billions of IOPS down to barely touching them by running a single two PowerShell commands. Which I wrote down, because you only ever run these commands once or twice in your life, which is when you set things up. So I wrote them down on the notepad in the hotel.
Awesome.
Module 5 is capacity planning and architecture. For that, we're going to get our good friend Adam in here.
Yeah, absolutely. He's going to kind of go into a lot of the details. We've got a lot of great performance data, a lot of planning stuff that his team has worked on, and he's going to share a lot of that information for you. Then you're going to come back, talk a little bit about Citrix and kind of how Citrix and the Microsoft solution really kind of play together, and it's kind of when do you bring that Citrix solution?
Absolutely, and that's often a fairly tricky question. By the way, for those of you that are at home, Adam's right there. Say hi, Adam, real loud.
Hey guys!
There you go. There's Adam. So he's going to get back up here and probably trade places with me for a little while later on. But the Citrix piece, with Windows Server 2008 R2, Microsoft and Citrix teamed up, primarily to compete against VMware in the VDI space, and they developed something called vAlliance, which is the Microsoft foundation layer for the operating system, for the management, and for the hypervisor. Paired up with Xen Desktop as a VDI implementation engine and Xen App and the provisioning server and all that kind of stuff. And to be able to go after really big, huge scale projects. And the assumption that everybody kind of made was that if you're going to do VDI in Windows, you had to go down this route. There really wasn't another option. If you were a little doctor's office or a lawyer's office with 20 employees or something, you put up a VDI implementation strictly on Windows Server 2008 R2, and you can go up to several hundred in that model, but the management flexibility wasn't there. You kind of set up a VDI implementation, and that's it. That's all it is. You couldn't carve it up into policies and go multi-client. That's what Citrix brought to the table. And those sorts of policy flexibility, multiple clients, Android devices, iOS devices, are still where they fit in and where they extend the solution. It's just that the base solution they build on has gotten many, many orders of magnitude more flexible now.
Yeah, absolutely. Our final module is going to be on Microsoft VDI licensing, which is always kind of one of these, kind of tricky things. So we're going to bring Adam Carter back for that. He's going to get in-depth and detailed. So at the end of that module, all of us will become licensing experts.
I'm just going to run for the hills, personally. I'm not going nowhere near this building when you guys talk about licensing.
All right, buddy. Well, let's jump right in. Let's hit module one, which is our introduction to desktop virtualization. Where we're really kind of heading in this module is to talk about what it is and the components that exist, and really kind of the why. Talk about why we deal with desktop virtualization. Then we'll get in to some of the terminology, because a lot of times when people are brand new to VDI, there's things, terminology, private, pooled, session, yep. Session desktop, all of these kind of challenges that people have with wording and understanding exactly what it is. So we'll talk about the benefits of each type, talk about contextually where it fits, and then obviously we're going to talk about where the Microsoft sweet spot is and the Microsoft offers are. So let's jump right in and talk a little bit about why VDI and kind of where VDI fits. We've titled this Jumpstart the enabling, using Microsoft VDI to enable the new work style. New work style is essentially due to how things have really changed in the workspace.
Yep.
And that could be across the enterprises, it could be across small to mid-sized businesses. You've got two major shifts in the IT world. You've got cloud, and then you've got this new era of mobility, right? Two major trends that really affect IT. I personally always have an expectation of even Microsoft IT that my applications and my environment be available anywhere that I am and available all of the time.
So
it used to be a 9-to-5 job.
Yeah, well, I think you actually made a pretty important distinction on that point. What you said that time, which, by the way, very subtle but very important, my applications. In the past, it used to be, I need to make my PC available wherever I go. And so I want to be able to take this thing right here and travel around the world with it and use this. But now it's more, I want to use any device I happen to have available at the time. I want to get to the application. The application is the thing you're presenting to a user, not necessarily the desktop.
Yeah, Absolutely. There's several kind of questions that kind of come in. There's the how I embrace the cloud question, which is kind of, in all honesty, it's a little outside the scope.
Yeah.
Obviously, with Windows Server 2012 and the System Center solution, that's essentially what we're, along with Windows Azure, calling the cloud OS. There's the how do I increase the efficiency in my data center. Now, this is directly related, particularly around VDI.
Absolutely.
In the fact that with Windows Server 2012 and the enhancements that we've made, you talked about the storage enhancements and some of those things really allow us to kind of increase that efficiency. But really where this target sweet spot kind of lands us is how do we deliver this next generation of applications? And it goes beyond just me having my desktop on my computer. Users really want to have this flexibility to have their applications, whether they're on their own personal device. We talk a lot about this when we start talking about the consumerization of IT or the bring your own device. You've got your Microsoft Surface sitting right here. How do we deliver those next generation of applications out to those desktops? And then finally, how do we enable the more modern work style? What we're starting to see today is I want to have my experience, my applications, my desktops available to me at all times, regardless of if it's inside the normal working hours, regardless of the type of device that I'm accessing my applications with. And Corey mentioned and talked about this. It's cross-platform. It's across a lot of, whoops, as I changed the slides accidentally. It basically kind of walks that blurry line today. I find myself all the time joking internally in Microsoft here about my work-life balance or lack thereof. Really, what you're doing on your own personal devices and in your own personal life, it really starts to blur the line with your work life. I've always got my email available on my phone. I always want to be able to go in and submit my expense reports, no matter what device that I'm on and what I'm working on. So really, it's providing your work-based applications on the devices that your users prefer to use. And VDI and all the solutions that encompass VDI are one method of doing this. And one of the interesting things, Corey, is that when we start talking about VDI and we start talking about all the components of VDI, there's really not one right or wrong way to deliver it. And it's not just about delivering that desktop to the user. It's about providing them that experience so it doesn't matter how I'm accessing it. It's just as seamless as if I was sitting down on my computer itself.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about the idea of delivering applications. And, you know, if you've looked at the jumpstart you did with Windows 8, you talk about Configuration Manager, publishing applications to Intune, being able to deliver those applications to devices. VDI, in today's era, becomes another way of delivering an application. It's just an application that potentially requires a desktop component, or requires, you know, a full operating system to power it. You were talking about an example of what MSIT does for Visual Studio. So that developers, for example, I've got my Surface device here, and you can't run Visual Studio on this natively, but what they've chosen to do is deliver Visual Studio via remote app, via VDI, so that you can actually run Visual Studio on your Surface RT device over VDI.
So yes, that's exactly what we've done for our demo centerized for the dev guys within DPE. Is we've kind of stood up this solution and provided
it. And it's an application delivery mechanism at that point. So it's enabling that work style where the focus is on the application, not on the desktop per se. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. Really, VDI is, when you talk about VDI, there's that remote desktop services component, right? You like to talk about it as like terminal services, but really all it is, they're desktops. They could be sessions, it could be a virtual desktop, whether that desktop exists for a day, an hour, or if it's assigned to me because I need the administrative privileges. Really, VDI and all these sessions, it's just another deployment model. It's just another way that we deal with deploying either applications or desktops for Windows. The difference here being is that we are actually able to manage and secure that stuff and ensure that a lot of that data and those desktops, they reside within those locked confines of my data center, and I don't lose control. In fact, I actually gain more control. It's a single point that I actually can manage. I'm not having to go and manage 400 unique individual desktop computers that could be anywhere in the world.
Right.
Those 400 unique individual desktops exist within my own data center.
Exactly right.
And I can manage that. So you've got that high degree of security and really optimization as well, right? Just think about this. I spent so much time in my life and in my previous life, I ran IT for a call center. A lot of folks know this. I spent so much time just mastering that gold image and getting that ideal workstation piece. And then every time I get that exactly to the point where it is, we'd have to go push it out and deploy it. And by the time it's finally deployed through all these systems across the enterprise, yep, we've completely changed it again. We just kind of run through the cyclical thing. The great thing about this solution is it allows me to do it within a single point and to always maintain that and to always have that security and that optimized experience.
And the technology that allows you to update these master images, there's a lot of different ways you can do it, a lot of different methods you have depending on what the underlying solution is. For example, with pool desktops, it's very simple. You update and you reconstruct all the desktops. Mm-hmm. When you add Zen Desktop into that picture, they've got some other methods which are equally as simple. When you talk about private desktops, which are desktops that are, you know, more persistent, use your standard configuration manager and your standard system center type tools. So this is a very well-worn path, but because you don't have to touch hardware and the variants of hardware and the, you know, connectivity, sometimes it's on, sometimes it's not, it's such a simple process.
Absolutely. Let's jump in and talk about, in this next section, the components of virtualization. So let's get in and first kind of let's lay that foundation, yep, work so that folks who aren't experienced with VDI can understand. The first thing, there are really four components to desktop virtualization. The first is your user state. User state, I mean, I'm going to oversimplify it here. It's your profile. It's what I'm used to, right? It's my desktop. It's my documents. It's all of those things, right?
Well, I don't think you're oversimplifying it by saying it's your user profile, because that's really what it is. It's what you see when you log on.
Absolutely.
It's just that there's a number of technologies that collectively gather all that information together. And mm-hmm, you've got the traditional roaming profiles and folder redirection, but also the newer user environment virtualization, which we'll take a look at in the next module.
Yep. Absolutely. The next piece, applications. Simple. The only reason we all have desktops,
yep,
is for applications.
That's right.
Right? And it's that delivery of those applications. We've got user sessions, all right? So that kind of state which I'm in and I'm interacting with that with that session, mm-hmm, and then desktop hardware. These four pieces are not all required. There are no dependencies. So when we start talking about virtualization, we start talking about desktop virtualization or even yeah, talking about remote sessions, we start looking at, okay, how can we decouple these pieces away from each other? When we truly want to get into the ideal virtualized desktop, the ideal desktop really in reality is, in order to support across multiple devices, multiple mm-hmm platforms, you want to start decoupling and separating all these things. My user state is separate from my applications, which is separate from my Windows sessions, which is separate from the hardware itself that it correct runs on, which is that fourth component.
As a consultant, when you approach implementing VDI, you never start by implementing the hypervisor layer and the sessions. You begin by implementing user state virtualization. You follow that up with application virtualization, because if you fundamentally don't have those things done, the VDI implementation is going to fail, period. Because what winds up happening is you have these images that A, constantly change, and B, bloat. So if you don't have a way right out of the gate to start separating user state and applications, you're creating a nightmare down the road. And so as a consultant, when I go in and I talk to customers about, you know, doing VDI implementation, usually, you know, the question becomes, hey, we want to do VDI because we heard it's cheap and easy, which kind of goes, well, hold on a minute. Now, it's not really necessarily cheap or easy. It's like anything else. It depends on how you do it.
Absolutely.
But you don't save time and money because you go push the VDI button and all of a sudden everything's better.
What's that VDI button?
It's in Server Manager, actually. There is just about a build me a VDI button in Server Manager and it'll do it for you. But you don't go. You go in and you say, okay, you know, addressing the business problem of why they need it first, and then as you begin the implementation, you separate user profiles, because it's the notion of, you know, you may not necessarily be on this same Windows install over and over and over again. Follow that by application virtualization, whether it be, you know, virtualization through remote app and terminal server type implementations, through Zenapp with Citrix, or through AppV. so whatever method that is to decouple the applications, then you can start talking about, okay, we're going to give you a user session at a desktop. Do I do that in a session desktop? Do I do that in a personal VDI or a pooled VDI? Mm-hmm. We got to stop using the term personal VDI because it's personal desktop or pooled desktop or session right. desktop. Collectively, the three of them are VDI.
Absolutely. Okay, so when we get in and we start talking about user state virtualization, when we get into this, the idea around this is to reduce that footprint. User profiles, and I mean, I go back to the days of NT, mm-hmm. right, where user profiles were could be extreme in size and could blow it up. And actually, even today, in today's world, they can as well, depending upon what's all carried with them, right? You've got Sally in accounting, and I love Sally, and I always make fun of her, but she needs that kitty cat wallpaper, right? Even though the fact that kitty cat wallpaper is like 700 meg in size, but she cannot seem to function without her kitty cat wallpaper.
Well, that's because it's a bitmap, not a JPEG. We need Sally. I've explained to her the difference. Never mind. I'm bitter. It's not just that. If you look at what Windows does, right, you save a file Windows, it forces you, if you're a regular Joe End user who doesn't really, I don't like to say knows what they're doing because that sounds like I'm putting that, I'm not, that doesn't know all the implications of what they're doing.
Absolutely.
You're going to put it where Windows suggests you put things, my documents, my pictures, my music, my torrented down TV show videos. and so your user profile can get huge. I will admit, I have a desktop in my home office, and my user profile is about 145 gigs.
Yeah.
Because I've thrown everything into my documents subfolder sort of mm-hmm. thing. And if I turn on roaming profiles, the first thing that's going to do is over my wireless network, copy it to my server. And then when I log on, copy back down again. And so they've developed, there's a bunch of mitigating technologies when you get offline files. You'll sync it, it's a little smarter. And you've got folder redirection, which says it's up here all the time. If the network's down, you just don't get it.
Yep.
So you put all these things together and you can mitigate the result, but at the end of the day, if you have an implementation where someone's logging onto a server, logging onto a desktop, logging onto a personal VM or private VM, and you're moving all this data around, mm-hmm. you're just asking for trouble.
Yeah. Absolutely. So some of the key points here, get that disk size down, that yep. storage size down, increase your I.O., right? Because typically, particularly around virtualization, right, I.O. is key, right, yep. getting that disk I.O. But really what we want to do is kind of enable the ability to have a truly shared desktop environment. Mm-hmm. And I'll go back to I dealt with this shared desktop world in a call center. It's 24/7, you've got 3 or 4 shifts a day, and everybody's using the same PC. So all this stuff has to kind of come around. And struggled with this piece. I remember talking years ago with you. I said, man, the yep. virtualized state of user state, this is going to be so much easier. And really, it kind of helps get to that shared scenario, and then also make sure that the stuff that we have as users, it's protected too. Get it off of those desktops. Get it into the servers.
Absolutely.
Make sure it's protected.
We're going to look at a piece of technology called a user profile disk in the next module that comes up, which really is, in my opinion, the best thing I've seen so far to address this scenario, because it 100% eliminates the need to copy files around and makes the user profile setup instantaneous no matter where you log on.
Yeah.
One of the biggest challenges in pooled VDI scenarios around this state was, with pooled VDI, by definition, we haven't even gotten into kind of defining those things yet, but with pooled VDI, you log on to a virtual desktop and you log off. The next time you come back, two things have happened. Number one, someone else first of all, the desktop you were on has been reverted to a clean state, so anything you did's gone. And number two, someone else is using it, so you're going to go on a different desktop. And if you've got that 100 meg profile, that all has to copy around. And user profile disks solves this. We'll yeah. show you to set that up and what it looks like.
Absolutely. All right. User state virtualization, got it. I hope everybody's good there. The second piece is application virtualization. Now, with application virtualization, what we want to do is simplify this delivery of applications and allow our users, any users, to run any application regardless of version. I love AppV because I can run multiple versions of a single application without running into what they call DLL hell, right? Because you get version 1 and 1.2 of the application, and sometimes DevGuide decides that he's going to write this application and he's going to use 5 different versions of the DLL.
I like it for a completely different reason.
Okay.
I like it because it takes me back to DOS.
It takes you back to DOS?
I miss DOS. I miss when editing an INI file made me feel like a man. Now, here's what I mean by that. If you're not familiar with AppV, what AppV does is it basically, if you have the file, you can run the app. Yep. There's no install.
That's right.
That was DOS. It's, you know, hey, you got a cool program. Give me your floppy disk, and I'll copy the folder, the directory, and I'll run the executable, and I have the program.
And now you have the program.
That's how simple it makes it. If you want to uninstall it, you go delete.
And it's gone.
Right? You know, I remember the days of Windows 95.
Even before that.
Oh, yeah. Windows 3.1, I don't think, was as bad with DLL hell.
No, not nearly.
But 95 was pretty rough with it.
Yeah, absolutely. It also really kind of enables you to kind of optimize the storage on that local workspace. And then you can also decide, do I want to run this locally? In other words, is this box going to be used offline? Mm-hmm. And if this box is going to be used offline, in other words, disconnected from the network, I want that application available to my users. But at the same time, you could also set up from a hosted environment that says, you're only allowed to run this application when you're here and you're connected to our network. That'll allow you to run the application and we'll stream it directly to you.
Yep.
Fantastic technology. I've been on board with this even before the company that Microsoft acquired. I'd done several POCs and actually several implementations of this application virtualization. I'm a huge fan of it. And the cool thing about it now, we've really gotten to the point, Corey, where the performance and the experience is absolutely no different.
Absolutely.
I have AppV applications delivered to me on my workstation. I don't even realize it.
Well, that's ultimately what it's for, right? It's to completely separate the application, make it completely transparent to the user. For those of you that have worked with AppV in the past, the intimidating thing with AppV has always been the sequencing, which is, you know, taking an application that's not ready for AppV today and making it ready to be deployed with AppV. And, you know, in the past with AppV 4 and I think 4.1, the last couple of versions, it was a bit of an art form, and particularly with Office, right? Because if you're deploying Office in VDI, ideally you do it through AppV. And if you look up the Office 2010 sequencing recipe, it's not a prescription, it's a recipe. You can kind of add some more of this and a little more of that to customize it. It was about a 5-page, fairly detailed document. For Office 2013, you run 3 commands. The first command downloads the bits. The second command sequences them. The third command produces the .appv file. You then copy that to either your ConfigMan implementation or your AppV implementation, and you're done. They've made this so easy.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. The next piece, desktop virtualization. This is really kind of that key point. Data center hosted virtual machines. Okay. There's one thing that drives me nuts when people talk about VMs. Mm-hmm. They don't realize a VM, it's a workstation.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be treated the same exact way as that physical machine that's sitting right in front of you.
Absolutely.
It is a workstation, right? Now, is it the entire system? In other words, do I have administrative access? Can I install things on it? Or is it just a delivery mechanism for my applications, right? And we'll talk about this, and we'll talk about private and personal, and basically, you know, is it one single image that's shared amongst users? Is it one image that's just for me? Pooled and shared desktops, we'll get to those terms. And then finally, session virtualization. You don't always need a VM to get implementations or things virtualized. You can deliver shared sessions from servers. This is terminal services. This is what we know and love as terminal services. And actually, a lot of folks jump immediately to the VDI scenario when they don't need to.
Exactly.
There's a lot of cases where we can actually do a shared session and deliver a session-based application and replace a lot of these pooled desktop scenarios.
Well, if you go back to, at the risk of, I'll go there, put it that way. If you deal with some organizations that promote VDI, because the only solution they have is Windows in a VM, that becomes what VDI is. But the reality is when, if you're looking at a Microsoft stack, and which is what I primarily consult on, not the only thing I consult on, but I do primarily Microsoft. Otherwise, you probably wouldn't have me here. You know, the question becomes, you know, I want VDI. It's okay, you want VDI. First we'll do session, then we'll do app, and then we'll go, okay, now we're going to do the desktop portion of VDI. And it becomes, okay, we're going to do it in terminal server. Right, session desktops.
Mm-hmm.
And boy, but that's not VDI. Well, yes, it is. Your goal here is to get a user on a Windows desktop without having to put the PC necessarily in front of them.
Mm-hmm.
90% of the consulting engagements I do wind up with session deployments as opposed to VMs, because all they're trying to do is get to we want a couple of applications available in a desktop environment, available over the WAN, but in the data center. Why do you need a full version of Windows Desktop to do that, and the complexity that goes along with doing that?
That's the only way I know how to do it.
The scalability of session desktops is much greater. It's one thing you've got to update. The density is higher. The performance will generally be better. It is a better solution for putting a lot of desktops in front of a lot of users in this virtual scenario than putting them in VMs. It doesn't address every technical scenario, so then you kind of start stepping back and, okay, well, the session model won't work because users need to be admins, or the apps are not compatible, or those kinds of very common technical reasons. There's only a couple of them. So then you go, okay, well, that's out. Now, do we do pooled desktops or private desktops? Private desktops are a little bigger of a hammer to drop than pooled desktops. Pooled desktops, you get a little more flexibility. You can oversubscribe a bit. The management's a little bit simpler. The storage is going to be a little more efficient. But there are reasons that might not work.
Yeah.
So then you go to private desktops. And it's a very straightforward kind of decision tree and conversation if you know all the trade-offs.
So when you start a consulting engagement around this, your first step is not to jump all the way to that virtualized desktop environment. You first want to, you're looking for, hey, where can I get the most bang for my buck?
Yeah, what's the problem I'm trying to fix, not what's the solution you want me to implement. And there's been times that, I've gotten in this and said, hey, we want VDI, and we've walked out having done roaming profiles, and we're finished, we've solved the problem. Because all they want, what they believed they needed to fix the issue wasn't what they needed to fix the issue. The issue was something other than what they thought it was. And that's the job of a consultant. Is to figure that out and convince people what to do. But, it's very, very, very rare. I would say less than 1 in 20 of the consulting engagements I've been on have wound up in an actual implementation of what we traditionally think of as VDI, which is, VM-based desktops.
Okay. Let's dig into our deployment options that we have here in this next piece here. So, here's kind of a good diagram, and I'm sure a lot of folks who've learned about VDI have seen this diagram before. This is kind of like, where am I and what device am I on, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what do I need? So you've got desktop sessions, okay? And I think you covered that pretty well before with your description. Desktop session, it's the application. You're not getting the entire desktop. You're not getting an entire workstation delivered to you.
You're getting a Windows desktop.
With an application.
Right, which is possibly all you need.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, pool VMs and personal VMs. I'm going to jump over to this next slide because this really kind of describes it a little bit better, right?
Can you go back to
you
the...
You want to go back? All right,
we'll go back. I just have a beef with people in Seattle.
Okay.
Well, you guys are all Microsoft. We're in Seattle. Every slide you guys do has library and coffee house.
Yeah.
I live in Florida. Beach and boat, just once.
Beach and boat?
Just once,
you got
please.
Wi-Fi on your boat?
I do.
Okay. Done.
Well, when I'm within range of the marina. Yes.
Done.
But, so that's just, expand your horizons, be more inclusive of the rest of the country. It's my one request. Now we can move on.
You just want a slide that says drinking margaritas in the sun and doing VDI, don't you?
Yes, I do.
And it's rainy outside.
Be honest with me, is that really a problem?
No, I have no problems with this
Excellent.
Whatsoever. I'd take that over what we've got outside. All right, pooled or shared desktops versus personal, aka private desktops.
All right, so let's really understand the difference here. And I'm going to violate a copyright of Adam Carter and use the hotel analogy.
Uh-oh.
All right, Adam's giving me the thumbs up. Think about it this way, right? A personal desktop is your desktop. This right here is my personal desktop. And in order to incorporate this desktop into VDI, I'm just going to move this operating system into a VM. But I'm going to retain the same fundamental level of control over what's on this machine as if it were physically on this box. So it's like I bought a condo. I'm going to go in, I'm going to set up pictures on the wall and furniture, and because it's my condo, I can go in and I can, change around some stuff. And I essentially use the resources of that condo for as long as I'm living there. Typically, this is things like, you know, I want to run applications that require admin rights on the machine, or I need admin rights on the machine. Or I'm going to be storing files locally and working on files locally long term. We'll talk about the underlying technical implications of that in just a second. But then you go to a private model. Pop the slide up for a second. When you go to a private model, it's a little bit different. A private model is the hotel model, where, you know, I'm going to go stay at a Marriott and I'm going to have a room. So I go into my room and I go, cool, this is my room, and I customize it. So I move the bed. I've done this because we have a couple of kids and we'll often shove one of the beds against the wall so one doesn't fall down the cracks and we forget it in the hotel. So we customize the room just a little bit. But the problem is we go out and we come back a couple hours later and they've put the bed back. It's like, dang it.
You got a shared environment, right? You've got
Yeah, and you know, now we come back to the same room, but they still put the bed back.
Yep.
We come back to the hotel the following week, and now we're down the hall, but I'm like, but why was in that room? And I hid money under the bed because I assumed I'd come back to the same place. This is what pooled desktops are. If you want a more sort of technical analogy, shared computer lab in a university, you're going to walk in and go, which seat's free?
Yeah.
And if you've at all left anything on the seat you were on the last time, it's gone.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Absolutely.
Because these things will automatically reset.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when I mentioned the term oversubscription, going back to your call center analogy. Right? You have, say, you know, 24 people in a call center working on, you know, 8 people on a 3-hour shift. I think I've actually done the math correctly. That'd be the first time in my life I've done basic. My 7-year-old brings home schoolwork, and I kind of look at it and go, I've never done addition. I'm sorry. I had a calculator. So, you know, from a technical standpoint, you can have fewer desktops, fewer VM images than you have people, because they can cycle through them, but they're going to reset every single time and all the changes are lost. Now, on the backside of that, in a pooled desktop scenario, typically they use a model that's often called linked clones or chained masters, which I'll show you the actual implementation of this in the third module, do the deployment. But you know, you have one VHD and they'll create differencing disks off of that VHD. And so the storage is kept way down, and that central gold image can be put on a share which has CSV caching and get tremendous performance benefit. With personal desktops, every VM gets its own full-blown copy of the OS in a VHD, and so there's a lot more storage, there's a lot more growth. The way you manage patching and updates is a little bit different.
Yeah.
When you deal with personal VHDs, which is everybody has the functional equivalent of a laptop, you would patch it as if they had a laptop.
Mm-hmm.
You don't change your management strategy because it's in a VM. It's the same. It's a long-term installation of Windows you've got to maintain long-term. With pooled, you can update the gold image, the master image, and repropagate that out because the individual VM, desktop VMs, are disposable. We don't care about them.
Yeah.
So if there's an update comes down, update the gold, reconstruct. Update the gold, reconstruct. And you do this as often as you want, and the tools within Windows make this completely transparent to the user, because Server Manager will allow you to roll these things out as people use them. So there's some real neat things built in here.
Now, Corey, you have a VDI implementation that consists of a whole bunch of things. With a few minutes that we have left in this module, do you want to jump in? This is the fully constructed version, right?
Exactly right.
We're going to flip the cooking show analogy on its head a little bit. We're going to show you what the end product looks like first, yeah. And then we're going to go through and show you how we actually did it. Are your systems up and running?
They are, yeah.
Okay.
Beauty. Yeah, they're back there on the floor.
Yes. So have floor-based VDI.
Floor-based VDI. Have a look at the screen here. Guys, there we go. So basically what I have here is Windows Desktop, and I'm just logged on as a regular Joe user, which just happens to be myself. And if you look on my start menu, and I'll show you where this came from in a second, I've got 6 things that are of interest to me. I have this thing called WordPad Work Resources, Calculator, and Paint. That's just because that's what the wizard spit out. This could be Visual Studio and Office and whatnot. And then I've got a personal desktop, a pool desktop, and a session desktop. So let's start all these and just take a look at them. Here's my personal desktop. Well, that runs up in the background. We'll go grab another one of those. Let's grab the pooled desktop.
Okay. Now, you've delivered those icons to that user account as mm-hmm. the administrator, correct? You didn't have to go anywhere and...
No, I'll show you where this came from in just a second.
All right.
So let's get these, make sure all 3 of these are up here. All right, so here we go. So what I have here now, let's start with the personal desktop. This is a Windows desktop. Mm-hmm. This particular one happens to be running on a copy of Windows 8. So it's just a full-on Windows desktop, and there's nothing really that you know you need to kind of worry about here. It's just you go in and you do your thing and do what you got to do. The pooled desktop, or the personal desktop, that's one I was just on, sorry, the pooled desktop, which is over here, is the same thing.
Right? Okay.
So from a user standpoint, there's utterly no functional difference at all, except this was taking it for a little second longer to log on. It's the same desktop experience. Right, so from a user's viewpoint, they don't need to know what this is. Right, it's just a Windows desktop. Where you make the choice between pooled and private is on the management side of the house. And then finally, we got a session desktop. And this is, you know, a lot of people go, well, session desktop, that's not VDI. How is this any different? It's still just a Windows desktop. Now,
yeah.
Technically speaking, this is a server desktop because it's an RDS server. Mm-hmm. But with the full user interfaces infrastructure installed, which is, you know, all the themes and, you know, your start menu, all your store, all your multimedia tools and whatnot, it is equal in functionality to a Windows 8 desktop, but with a fraction of the infrastructure requirements. You know, as an example, if all I was here to show you today was session desktops, I wouldn't need a bunch of computers on the floor back there.
Okay.
I wouldn't need Hyper-V. I wouldn't need a domain, well, I wouldn't need a domain controller, but yeah. I wouldn't need a separate Hyper-V server to run VMs on. I could do it on a single machine with a couple of VMs because I don't need the hypervisor component. But still, I'm delivering that same desktop. Now, these other items we have here are what are called remote app entries, which are use the exact same underlying infrastructure, but instead they present just a single application.
So if I need WordPad,
right?
Because I'm the one guy in the company that still uses WordPad.
Oh, it's great.
you can actually just offer me up just that single application,
right?
And I don't see it any different.
No.
I mean, I'm looking at this. This is no different than if it was installed locally, right?
Right. I mean, I take the published version of Calculator, and I can take the published version of Paint. And it just, these are the three it does by default, so I just left them there. So it's fine to get the point across. They interact as full-fledged versions of the desktop. And they even will pop up notification entries down here. So, like, you know, with the case of Office, where it uploads to SharePoint, for example, it includes a task area notification icon. That'll actually pop up down there as well.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how did I actually get these guys up on the screen? Well, built into Windows, in the control panel, and it's by the way, if you're looking to find this, it's the one control panel entry that's not here in this screen. You've actually got to either go to like a list, an icon view, or a small view, or you type remote. But there's this thing called remote app and desktop connections,
okay,
which subscribes to a feed. All right, so here's the feed that I'm actually subscribed to. I can update the feed, and what it does is it pulls down a list of all the published desktops and applications that are on the remote app website. The remote app website is here. So rds1.contoso.com/rdweb. This is just when you publish the remote desktop services website, it creates a subdirectory rdweb. You just navigate to that on the server, log on as a user, and what you're seeing here is the same thing that's on my start menu. And so what I've done is gone to this predefined URL. This is kind of a baked-in URL. It's going to be the same for everybody. The only thing that's going to change is your server name. And what that will do is pull down the feed, which is the same stuff you're going to see right here, but it has the benefit of populating the start menu.
Mm-hmm.
And so as you publish applications, they really become full-fledged citizens for the user. They just go to their start screen, hit the application, they get the application. I mean, at the end of the day, that's all they want to have happen.
Yep. I've got a couple of questions here, and just as, of course, as I go to read them, the awesome people handling our Q&A have actually cleared them out. The first question, and I'm going to destroy the name, so I'm not even going to try, deals with presentation virtualization, and how is that different from application virtualization?
Presentation virtualization is delivering a desktop over RDP.
Okay.
Application virtualization is packaging an application so that it can be decoupled or separated from the operating system that's running it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It has nothing to do with how the user sees it. You can put application virtualization apps in presentation virtualization sessions or in live interactive sessions like what I'm using right here. It doesn't matter how you get the UI to the user.
Mm-hmm.
It's a way of separating the application. So presentation virtualization is the RDP protocol.
Gotcha.
Application virtualization is the AppV product.
Okay. Some folks at home, and I know we only have a few seconds left in this module, interested to see kind of what our underlying infrastructure is, so maybe we can throw together a quick little diagram and show folks of that during our break. But it's fairly simple what we've got going on here.
Well, in all honesty, I don't need to jump back to my screen for a second. I don't need to put together a diagram because Server Manager does it for me. And we'll get to all that.
Oh, there you go. There you go.
So done.
Done. Diagram done. Complete. All right, folks, so that's it for this particular first introductory module that we've got.
Yep.
Hopefully you've got a good understanding of kind of the underlying components of VDI and what it is. We're going to talk about the user experience here in our next module when we come back from a short break. So we'll see you back in just a few minutes. Thanks, guys.
See you then.